Hey, what is up? Welcome back to the Mind Your Hives Beekeeping Podcast. It has been a little bit. I am your host, Greg Lehman. I am here with my beautiful and talented wife, Kara Jo.
Hello, hello.
Oh, the hello. Dude, by the way, this is the third time we try to do this. Luckily, we only recorded about 2 minutes.
3.5 minutes both times.
Both times. I don't know. I think it's like a bad SD card or something. I am not tech savvy, but it's weird like repeating yourself. Even just for like 3 minutes.
Far. Yeah.
So I've already given this shout out twice, but
we'll do it again.
But shout out to our buddy Ryan. Ryan works over at Tonewood Brewing in Jersey and is a part of I think the first podcast I ever went on as a guest, Fear of a Craft Beer Planet.
Do they still do that?
Yeah, guys, do you still do it? I feel bad that we've been off the air for like 5 weeks, but I think they're more like 6 months. Shit, maybe more.
I mean, COVID's kind of screwing yeah, people.
That's just tough. I mean, a lot of our friends are in that age group where they've got like, you know, 10-year-olds and 12-year-olds that are so active, and I think they just have a hard time getting together. But point of bringing my boy Ryan up is he was like, hey, what is this hello, hello that you guys get such a kick out of when Kara says it? And then I was like, oh, that's Gary Delabate from Howard Stern Show. That's how he does his little hello, hello.
Did he know about the tape?
I think he did, but it was me, Jay Rose, who's also a part of that podcast, and Ryan. And then me and Jay just started going back and forth with how amazing that video is. So Gary Delabate in like the 80s?
Probably, yeah.
Gotta be the 80s. He recorded like on a camcorder. Set up a camcorder on a tripod and recorded like a I love you to a girl that broke up with him. Like, I want you back. And he opened it with hello, hello. And somebody years later found it and sent it to Stern. And they played it on the air and they play it all the time now. And it's just classic. Oh, it's so good. And he's owned it. So every time Gary gets on the mic, hello, hello.
I just developed the hiccups. So just be forewarned.
If I have to do this for a fourth time.
You don't, but if you hear hiccups. Also, can you hear? Can they hear the baby chicks?
Oh my God, they have to be able to. So we bought.
Hold on, let's be quiet. Can you hear them? They're sleeping right now.
We got 5 new baby chicks. They're now
so adorable. They're like 6 weeks old.
Yeah, yeah. They basically were born the last
like
time.
Like 5 weeks
old. The last time we did this podcast.
Yeah, they're so adorable.
They warm my cold dead heart. Second time I've said that yeah, one.
But it's a true. It's really a good is one.
True. They're so fun. But we have them inside in our living room in a brooder.
If you have chickens or want chickens and you are on the fence about getting baby chicks, because I wasn't so sure, we got them in quarantine last time, get them. They are so fun and fascinating and just, oh, I just love them so much.
Yeah, the first few years, 5 or so years that we had chickens, we would buy them as pullets, which makes them like, I don't know. A little older, like it's like you're buying teenagers. And this time we got, or the last time we got like day olds. This time they were a little bit older, but still
so
like
cute.
Timing, not even close to as big as my hands. But they're so great. Anyway, what else have we been up to? We've been trying to take advantage of the summer a little bit. Kara is a high school teacher. And this summer, I feel like teachers deserve the best break ever for just the absolute nightmare the last 2 years have been with teaching, but really last year was so bad. I mean, you were so...
I was good until May, and I just hit a wall in May.
Yeah, I think parents hit a wall in May, and then they took out their shit on all the teachers.
I don't know.
I mean, crazy people in this world.
We just need to be able to be ready to go in a little bit over a month, and so we're just trying... I'm trying to relax... de-stress, but we've been doing fun things like going kayaking, going to parks and grilling, and we went to Morris Arboretum.
Oh yeah, that was that actually our anniversary?
The day,
the day before, yeah. We went over to Morris Arboretum. Morris Arboretum is a, I think it's a whatever of Penn, University of Pennsylvania. It's only 15 minutes from us, but it's in Philly, like right on the outskirts. It's just like beautiful property with these amazing gardens and all these tree. I mean, it's an arboretum, so it's tree focused, but it's like unreal rose gardens with just, and I realized while I was there. So like, we've been talking like, oh, let's go over to Morris Arboretum. And like, I still in the back of my head, I'm kind of like, am I really going to go to a garden and walk around? But I think that's like my old brain, because once I was there, oh my God, I'm obsessed.
Yeah,
like,
it was great.
I remember, I mean, like, I think flowers are cool, but like when I first got into gardening, it wasn't about flowers. I was like all about fruits and vegetables.
You like hated flowers. You're like, flowers are dumb. And well, then I got into medicinal herbs and which are flowering, which
it wasn't that flowers are dumb. It was just that like the effort you and the learning that's needed to grow, I appreciated getting a vegetable, feeding ourselves. Right. Like, you know, we would try to can a lot of the stuff that we grew, and then it's like kind of like having fresh veggies in the winter. And I found that so much more appealing than just like, check out my chrysanthemums.
Right. And we still don't do that. I don't care about that either. Yeah.
But now, I mean, we're planting these native plants and flowers, you know, and it's about the bees and it's about the pollinators, but it's really interesting. I remember we went into this rose garden at Morris Arboretum, and like, again, my initial thought is like, whatever. I mean, it's cool looking, but then I look at a flower and I see, I think like right away, it was like five different pollinators on one flower.
Well, I'm trying to remember what that was.
And I was just, I mean, fascinated and so interesting. Just even now, you know, 7 years into beekeeping, it's like my brain has changed so much in so many facets. But even just like going to an outdoor garden and walking around and seeing things, like it's just there's so much more interest in all things agriculture to me now.
Because that your mind and eyes have opened up to what's actually there. Before it just seemed simple. Since we you know, it's been years, but, you know, planting all these native plants, cultivating all this stuff, just learning more. I mean, I know nothing but about, you know, native bees and flies and just pollinators. Cracking a cider. Just, I've been seeing so many more. The other day, I didn't even tell you this. I saw, you know, the fully fluorescent green mason bees?
Oh, yeah, yeah, the
fully fluorescent.
The green sweat bee?
Sweat bee, not mason bee, sweat bee. And they're so tiny. And I've seen, like, the green-headed green thorax ones, but the fully fluorescent green one I saw the other day. And it's just, I don't know if it's the plants are bringing them in, which I'm sure, but it's just like, when you open your eyes and you look around, there's stuff going on that you don't even see.
So much going on.
Yeah.
So much going on. It's just, so... Hey, like my suggestion for everybody out there, like go find an arboretum near you. Go find some gardens. I mean, we're really fortunate. We're not too far from Longwood Gardens and then this Morris Arboretum. Like we have these amazing spots around us. But go find a place and walk around. I think I can say for a while at least, and I'm in the beer industry and I get people always like, what's your favorite beer? Or like, what's your favorite beer you've ever had? And I usually think of it as like, what specific beer? But I now will answer that like, Karen and I were celebrating our anniversary and we were walking around Morris Arboretum and it was 100 degrees out. Morris Arboretum, if you're hearing this, earmuffs. And we packed a little lunch and we found this cool spot in the shade and we sat down and we each cracked a beer that Kara had like wrapped in a ice pack. And it was just so cold.
It was just a Pilsner. It was perfect.
Forest of Maine House Lager. And I just like... I'm sweating. I've been carrying around this cooler bag the whole time. And just that beer tasted the best. It was the best tasting beer I've ever had.
It was so great.
Unbelievable.
So delightful.
It was so cool. So good. So yeah, we've been trying to have some fun. Hey, shout out to our buddy, John Slack. John has a podcast. He's a comedian in New York City. He has a podcast called Buenas Tardes Amigos with his beautiful Colombian wife, Lorena. And he works at a comedy club. He works at the comedy club. I will argue the best comedy club in New York called The Stand. There's like the Comedy Cellar and there's The Stand. I am a Stand guy for sure. But he works there. And because he works there, he's kind of given us a little heads up on some things that are going down. And Karen and I got to go see a surprise set that Dave Chappelle put on. It was a midnight show. It's like midnight till like 4 a.m.
I know. I was like, what am I, 21? Like, we're going out at 11 o'clock at night. I'm like, okay.
Yeah. So it was day of, it was like a Wednesday morning and Slack calls. He's like, yo, Chappelle is coming. Like, be on the lookout. They're going to release tickets. And like, I kind of know when they release tickets. So we were really watching watching their Instagram feed and it pops up. We were able to grab them. And I mean, just amazing show. So much fun.
Oh, it was incredible.
Yeah. If you get a chance, Questlove once said, I think it was on Talib Kweli's podcast, and he said, if I ever have a chance to witness greatness, to see someone be great, I take it and I do it, no matter who it is. And he was like, I don't care if it's Bruce Springsteen or if it's Paul McCartney or if it's Dave Chappelle. And I did that. So about 5 weeks prior, the same situation popped up and Kara wasn't able to join me. And I went and saw Chappelle and weirdly enough, sat next to Questlove. And then...
Stop bragging.
I know, but we've been having... that was me.
I was working then.
Yeah, you were working. But... so we took the opportunity. Like, you're not going to get a chance to see Chappelle in like a 40 person room. Unreal. And it was so amazing. And then, shout out John, we were able to stay and hang out for the after party. And I just love this. This is so interesting. So we're standing there and like, who are we? Like, there's like celebrities everywhere and just like, I don't know, people that at least view themselves as being very important. And we're just standing there like drinking a beer, just hanging out, and there's DJ Traumas playing, and we're having a great time. Kara's like dancing around, and I go to get drinks, and I come back, and this dude like hits me on the shoulder as I'm walking past, and he's like, what did he say? He's like, you're the dude, you're the guy.
So what happened was Will Sylvans was a comedian that I was not really aware of.
Yeah, and he was the host of the show, okay. Will Sylvans.
So he is hilarious, like just absolutely hilarious,
total
like,
killer.
Oh my god, so funny.
Yeah, he was so good,
so funny. So I walked by, I had like seen him a couple times just like in the venue, and so when I walked by him we caught eyes again and I was like, dude, you're hilarious. Like,
well, I think it's funny, you were like, I'd never heard of
you. I was
you.
Like, I didn't even no, I said, I didn't even know you existed until tonight.
It's a weird thing to say.
Well, I didn't. And I was like, and your mate, like I'm just like I just love him. So we started talking about school, we started talking about stuff, and then he was like, what do you and your husband do? And I was like, well, we are beekeepers. And he was like, what? Oh my God, you're a beekeeper. So then that led to a whole other conversation. So then Greg walked back out after he got the drinks and he goes, is this him? Is this him?
I'm like, why is Will Sylvans grabbing me and being like, are you the guy? And I'm like, yeah, I'm the guy. What's up, Will, man? You were so funny. Nice to meet you.
Oh, so funny.
And then it was so cool. He starts asking questions, like educated bee questions.
No, he goes, he said to you, and he said the same thing to me. And then when you showed up, he asked the same thing. He goes, something like, what is something that you can tell me that I can be better for the bees?
Which, like, okay, Will Sylvans, this dude I know of and like respect. He writes for Michael Che's
show. Oh, yeah.
Show.
No, like, now I know all about him. And he's like,
so good.
Yeah.
But and he like within a minute asks me what can I do to help the bees myself. And I look at him, I'm like, am I being punked right now? Like, I think I made the joke of like, if I had a diary, I would have written in it like, I hope Will Sylvans asks me what he can do about the bees. And we just start going back and forth. And then next thing you know, I'm showing him pictures of like bee penises.
Yeah, we hung out for a long time.
Yeah,
I was like, can we be best friends? Because you're just like, he just so is like funny. One of those people. I mean, he's obviously successful, and I think he's successful because he just like is just a bright, shining person that is, you just
and I
one of those people.
And then I felt kind of stalkerish because I was like, well, Will, like, do you eat honey? Because you're a vegan. And he's like, oh, yeah, I'm a vegan. But like, yeah, I eat honey. Like, I think you just got to know where it's coming from. Right. And I'm like, dude, you are on it.
More diary entries.
Yeah. But this is a kind of like a battle with vegans is honey vegan friendly because it is a quote unquote byproduct of an animal. But the honey we take is extra honey. Like, if we don't take it, that hive gets too crowded and then they leave. And unfortunately, 80-90% of swarms die and don't survive. So like, in order for us to keep our bees alive and healthy, we need to take that honey. And we leave honey for them. And we you know, our mentality is bee first.
And our mentality is, if you are a beekeeper, the brood chambers, so the first three boxes, the bottom three boxes.
Because we use medium boxes, the first, yeah. The bottom three. Yeah. If you use deeps, it's a little different. But our technique, the brood chamber is three mediums.
And we do not touch that honey ever. So ever. They get all of that. And then we only take from supers that we can take from.
Yeah. And I loved, he just was asking all these great questions. And it's kind of funny because when we started this podcast, I kind of had this goal of, can we get, quote unquote, some celebrities to come join us in the bee yard and then just sit down for like a half hour and talk about
it. Well, as we were leaving, because he all of a sudden was like, oh, I gotta go. Someone came up and he's like, oh man, I gotta go. And I was like, okay, well, you should come beekeep with us, Will. And he goes, no, no, no. And then he turns around and goes, okay, well, maybe. And I was like, yeah. I think he would love it.
Oh, he would. I just want to hang out with the dude because he just seems like such a genuine guy. But yeah. But I've said so many times, I think the only, like, again, quote unquote celebrity, I kind of hate the term celebrity, but quote unquote celebrity, I think the only ones that would do something like this are New York City comedians, because like during the week, they're not always busy. And a lot of times, like, you know, they're looking for content. They're looking for experiences that then lead to jokes and lead to things. And I was like, this could be a pretty rad experience for somebody if they're into it.
Yeah. And we suit them up like you're gonna be fine. You're not getting stung. His podcast is called Talk Clearlier Podcast, if you want to check him out. He's really funny.
Check out the Michael Che Show. Season one is out right now on HBO Max, and it got renewed.
They just got renewed.
But hey, Will,
love you, Will, man.
You're not gonna hear this, but I'm just saying, dude, if you want to come out, I will pick your ass up in New York and drive you down here, and we'll have a great time. And he even, like, we've texted a few times, and he, like, sent me some interesting studies that he read about bees.
Yeah, we'll have to talk about them later, because it was some interesting stuff.
Yeah, he said that Rosebud Baker, who's another comedian, she's got, like, some good bee bits on bees that I should check out. And, like, I just, like, I'm like, wow, I'm texting with Will Silvance right now? Like, what happened? This is so nuts. So, Will, we love you. You're the man. So, actually, kind of a link to that. Over the last couple of weeks, people keep asking us about mad honey.
And that's been like that's been a thing.
Yeah, it's been a thing. But
I guess somebody just started talking about it.
Yeah. King Bro Joe Rogan, I think, talked about it on a podcast. I didn't hear it, but I think he mentioned it on a podcast. And then people obviously hear that. And then they like Greg's a beekeeper. Let me ask Greg about it. So mad honey, what it is it's like it's a honey that, I think, like, Turkey is very known for it, Nepal.
Yeah, Nepal.
Some areas around the Black Sea are known for it. But it is honey that comes from rhododendron. There's like 700 or 500 species of rhododendron, and there's like two or three that's nectar, has psychedelic properties, but the honey that comes from that nectar keeps those same psychedelic properties, and it's pretty gnarly, apparently. So somebody brought it up. So people keep asking, like, hey, can you get mad honey? Do you know mad honey? Like, can your bees make mad honey? And I'm like, what is going on right now?
They can if they have the right stuff.
But so, like, I love it, though, because in our last episode, we talked about how there's such, like, bullshit bee influencer, social media people, these, like, there's, like, one woman in particular, it's so fake. So a lot of times people are bringing that stuff up, and I just hate it. But the people bringing up this mad honey, it's just funny. We get to have a funny conversation about it. So then I looked into it a little bit more, and this is a cool story. So in 67 BC, the Romans were invading the area that is now Turkey. I don't know when it became Turkey. I'm really not good at history, but 67 BC. Roman soldiers are invading, and the king in that area was Mithridates, I think. I don't know how to pronounce it, but that looks and sounds right.
Perfect.
So King Mithridates had his people line the path leading to their major city that was going to be under attack. They lined it with bits of mad honeycomb. So they put honeycomb, like, all over the place so that as the soldiers are walking, you know, to go, like, invade, they see honeycomb and they're like, oh, my God, this is amazing. And they're eating the honeycomb. And they all get like all messed up and they're all like hallucinating and they're just like in a weird state.
Well, I think it also induces drowsiness and stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. And then they're like all jacked up and then the king's soldiers come out and just slaughter them.
Wow.
And they won. Nuts. They beat these Roman soldiers based on this mad honey, which is, I mean, maybe strategy. That's what Rogan talked about. That'd be hilarious. But how funny is that? That's so good.
Yeah, it's great.
That's amazing. I love it. That's such a cool story.
Well, also, like, if you look up Mad Honey, it's these people, like, that have, their ancestors have been, you know, harvesting this honey forever, and it's part of their culture, part of their tradition.
Yeah, it's like a medicine. It's a little more sacred.
Absolutely. And in Nepal, I don't know about anywhere else, but in Nepal, they have to, like, climb these cliffs to go.
I think in Nepal it's like stingless bees that are collecting it.
Okay. I mean they are wearing veils.
I've seen some stuff on, maybe not then, but I've seen some stuff on that, and you see people eat it and then they like kind of like pass out.
Yeah. And it helps with, like, they say to take it before bed, helps with anxiety, stress, pain relief, sleeping disorders. It's mad expensive though. Like, if you go, Himalayan mad honey is what I'm looking at right now,
$600 a pound or something.
I don't know the math on it, but that sounds about right. 8.8 ounces for $75.
So yeah, not quite. It's like $150 a pound. But still, but again, dove into it a little deeper, and there's a lot of fake mad honey out there.
Of course there is.
Just like
Manuka honey.
A lot of fake Manuka honey. And Manuka honey people bring up all the time. And I think Manuka honey is like something that you, is what introduced you to honey and skincare, right?
Yes, yes.
All right, so wait, what is Manuka honey?
Okay, so Manuka honey is in New Zealand. You can only find it in New Zealand because it's made from like a tea tree plant, but it's not the tea tree, like tea tree oil everybody thinks of. It's like the Manuka tea tree plant. And so it actually has a compound in it called methylglyoxal.
Oh yeah, everybody knows that. Yeah. Methylglyoxal.
That creates an extra, and we're going to talk about like how honey is like antimicrobial, antifungal, but it's like this plant creates extra antimicrobial properties.
So extra.
And so, I mean, it's in like Meta honey.
Well, Meta honey is Manuka honey, right? Like
yes, yeah. But it's not just Manuka honey.
But it has like a little more healing properties.
Yeah, so it's like antimicrobial, yeah. Antibacterial.
So you had somebody suggest Meta honey for your acne, right?
Is that No. Meta honey is literally like a patch.
Oh, Meta honey is like saying like Neosporin. It's like a brand.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Yes. So, but somebody said you should get Manuka honey for your skin.
Yeah, that's like a, because it's extra antimicrobial. So I had acne, looking to how to heal it, got Manuka honey. And I actually found that Manuka honey wasn't working. And I was paying, you pay so much money for Manuka honey. And it wasn't working. And then I just switched to local honey and that worked way better because.
Well, maybe because, but.
Well, I'm pretty sure. So New Zealand says that about 1,700 tons of Manuka honey are made in New Zealand. That's like their report.
And they're basing that too off of how much can be made from the amount of the acreage of that plant.
Yes.
So like literally the amount of this plant that only we have can only produce X amount.
1,700 tons.
1,700 tons, which is a lot. It's like apparently it's a big season too. It's like 6-7 weeks that they can get honey from this plant.
But 10,000 tons are sold. And that was in 2016. 10,000 tons were sold.
I read 4 out of 5 jars of Manuka honey are found to be fake.
Yeah.
And they test like the DNA of it or something.
I'm
like
sure.
I'm not going to dive into it, but you can look on the internet. And if you really want Manuka honey, there are ways to tell that it's real or not. There's like certain standards that are stamped and approved like by New Zealand. They put their mark on it and very few have that. And you're probably going to notice it's a little bit more expensive than some other stuff that is probably fake.
But the fake stuff they're charging you a lot of money for too.
And also, but also realize like, I don't think you need Manuka honey for the benefits it's getting. I think you need local raw honey.
Well, so it's also interesting because Manuka honey is causing territory wars around Manuka because you can get so much money for the honey for it.
Like in New Zealand?
Yeah, in New Zealand. So Meta honey is, I think, legitimate, like, Manuka honey.
Yeah.
And it's like a dressing. It's like gauze and it's got all these other things in it. And it's supposed to help heal and clean. Our friend actually got into a motorcycle accident and she, like, her whole leg, road rash. Yeah. And it wasn't healing. And her friend that was a nurse was like, just get some Meta honey patches. And she said it worked like a charm.
Yeah, it's amazing. Did I dive into... No, I didn't. I was talking about how Will Silvance is a vegan and how I was like, I love that he asked about, I was like, hey, you're a vegan, you eat honey. And he was like, yeah, but I think you got to know where it's from. I don't think I continued that point, but so I wanted to just touch on it real quick. So there's a battle with vegans, whether honey is considered vegan or not. And this is what I have to say. If you're a vegan because you care about what you're ingesting into your body, right? And I would like to think most vegans are like that. I'm sure some are just like, I just care about the animals and that they get the byproduct is that they're hopefully ingesting better foods. A lot of vegans I know actually eat pretty bad.
Yeah.
But if you're a vegan, you're doing the right thing and you're doing it because you want to better the food that's going into your body, then you know what? Blanket statement, you shouldn't eat honey because most honey out there is bullshit. Like, don't go to the grocery store and buy honey. That honey, nobody should be eating. It's probably not real. It's probably pasteurized. I don't suggest it for anybody. But if you know a beekeeper, if you know local... If you have a local market that you trust and that you understand that they're vetting their suppliers and they have raw honey, you should eat it. It's so good for you. And as a beekeeper, like we already did talk about, like people that are processing their honey properly and they're doing it and they're keeping the bees alive and it's bees first, honey second, that's great. And I would argue with a vegan, I would say if you have a problem with my honey, like you're virtue signaling about being a vegan. Like you're way overdoing it by saying you shouldn't be eating our honey. Because if you understand this process at all, you're wrong.
Well, it reminds me of like we have chickens. They lay an egg every day. They have to lay an egg every day. Our chickens are treated like queens. I love them.
Yeah, our chickens are treated better than a lot of people's dogs are treated.
Like, so what am I supposed to...
Find me a vegan with a dog and I'll fight them about... how they should still eat eggs.
but it depends on where you're getting your eggs. It's the same thing.
Totally the same. It's a great example. Yes.
Like my chickens are going to lay eggs. What am I going to do with them? I'm going to eat them and I'm going to feed them back to them because they're delicious.
And we don't have any roosters. So those eggs aren't turning into other chickens.
Right.
So yeah, sorry. I feel like I didn't fully finish that set.
Yeah. I feel like that's good
statement.
So yeah. So honey's really healing and powerful as long as you're getting real honey.
Gotta get the right stuff.
Yeah. And I don't think I found if you're out there, you want it for skincare. I found that raw local honey works well.
Yeah, no doubt.
And you don't have to spend crazy amounts for Manuka.
We've said this on every single episode, but you know, when it's that whole thought of save the bees is, it's not honeybees that we're saving. It's the 20,000 other bees in this world that we're trying to save. And honeybees aren't native.
Honeybees are agriculture.
You really should look at honeybees more. They really are more like livestock.
Yeah.
However, when you raise them properly, you're helping pollinators around you. You're helping a lot more than just the bees. You know, we're not planting things for honeybees. We're planting things for pollinators that also honeybees are going to benefit from. But it really is like, it's livestock. It is. As it hurts me to say that because we got into this as like, oh man, this is going to be great. Like
we're going to save the bees.
Well, yeah, we're going to save the bees. We use it in our skincare and all that, but also like, this is better for the world, but bad beekeepers are terrible for the environment. terrible.
Yeah. It's, and I think we said this last time, but like beekeeping is becoming trendy and it's scary.
Oh, it's so scary.
And the thing is stupid
people on the internet.
When we did find out that like, okay, beekeeping is agriculture, like it, bees, I mean, I know they weren't native, but like they can be invasive. Like it was depressing, but you need to pivot and you need to say, okay, then we need to do the best we can to continue to support native.
Yeah, so we've been pulling honey. We're surrounded by buckets of honey right now.
We really are. They're in our dining room. Yeah. Our decapping bucket.
Yeah, it's, I mean, whatever, it's awesome. But we've been pulling honey and there's you know, I torture myself by trying to help people. And I have some, we have some really great mentees that we help that I love. They're awesome. And they're my, their head is in the right place. Years past, we've had some mentees that, they didn't get it and they didn't care about pollinators and they didn't care about anything else, but they wanted their honey, you know, and that like, isn't somebody that's going to mesh with me. And that's fine. It's not really fine, but whatever. They can go do beekeeping with somebody else. I don't need to help them. But, you know, I'm vice president of this beekeeping organization and we've got a Facebook page and people are asking questions and you know, I try to help people out and I see a lot of misinformation. I see a lot of just dodo birds leading other dodo birds in the wrong direction. And it's just, it's frustrating to see. And something I'm seeing right now, it's because a lot of beekeepers are pulling honey right now and extracting, is beekeepers are pulling honey that isn't capped. So, all right, here's how, we talked about this in the previous episode, but here's the quick rundown. Honeybees bring in nectar. They mix the enzymes in their mouth with that nectar. They store it in cells. They're continuously adding their own enzymes to that nectar. As that nectar loses moisture, chemical reactions are occurring. I think Kara has some like
we're gonna get
details about this, but chemical reactions are occurring. And as that moisture is dropping, once it gets to about 18% moisture, the bees know it because they're magical creatures and they put a layer of wax on top of that cell. They cap the cell. And when you see that cell capped, you know that is now honey. It's not nectar anymore. It's honey. And that's the sign. Bees know best, right? There's resource issues where bees maybe aren't getting the proper resources. There's not enough, so they are not making wax. And there can be honey that's uncapped, and you can test it.
Or they just don't have the resources to get, there's too much honey, they don't have enough bees. Like, the honey can be uncapped, and it can still be honey.
So I would say 97% of the, 95% of the cells on frames that we're pulling are capped. But there might be a chunk on one or two frames that's uncapped, and, you know, you can just do a quick test, and you're good. We use a refractometer, and you can tell. It's at, you know, something, usually it's below 18%, honestly. It's usually like 16 or 17, depends on the season, but whatever. But people are pulling this nectar. I'm not even call it honey. They're pulling nectar at like 20, 21, 22% moisture. And then they're like, oh, DIY hack, put it in a closet with a dehumidifier and it's going to lower the moisture down. And now it's honey.
And teachers are preaching this. Often. I'm taking classes and people, like, you should just do that.
People I highly respect in beekeeping are telling people to do this.
Yes.
And I'm like, okay, I got to rethink everything about this person. But it's just misinformation. I don't think they truly understand what's going down with the honey. And they think this is fine. But like, there is so much more going on in that hive with the bees and their enzymes and these chemical reactions and essentially fermentation that's happening that's creating honey that is not being mirrored when you just put this nectar in a bucket and you put it, open the bucket up and put it next to a dehumidifier in a closet and think that it, because it dropped a few moisture points, it's now honey. It's bullshit. And guess what? This is why constantly people are coming up to us and are like, what is with your honey?
Yeah,
it's so good. And it's like, there's a lot of bad beekeepers out there and they're just doing things and their honey kind of sucks.
Yeah, we have a friend that's a farmer and we like barter with them all the time. And so this was like last year, I gave them a big jar of honey and he was like a week later, hit me up and he was like, I didn't even know honey could be bad. He was like, but I was eating like the honey on our property. We have a beekeeper.
From a neighboring farm right next door. Yeah.
And he was like, and I was eating their honey and I thought it was like fine. And then I tasted your honey. I was like, oh, that other honey's bad. Like, yeah.
I say more often than not, when I try somebody else's honey, I'm like, I'm not like that into it.
So I have a question, because you said honey is fermented, but I thought honey wasn't fermented.
No. So it's interesting. The chemical process that's occurring with the bees are introducing bacteria and other organisms through the enzyme, through their spit. And the introduction of those enzymes mixing with the sugars in the nectar are creating these chemical reactions. It's kind of like when a yeast cell is consuming sugar and the byproduct of that turns out to be alcohol. Similar, different enzymes, different bacteria, you know, versus yeast in beer, but kind of, you know, from a bird's eye view, it's like a similar process, gotcha, just on like a very basic chemical standpoint. But like, okay, you said honey is antimicrobial, honey is antibacterial. We've talked about that a little bit, but like, you dove into some shit.
Well, I'm taking a class right now and the whole class was about it. By the way, you can totally hear the baby chicks. Okay.
So what, like, yeah, drop some knowledge on me.
Okay, so we need to start here. We need to talk about how honey is hygroscopic. So hygroscopic,
okay,
which means it absorbs moisture from the air. And the reason that it absorbs moisture from the air is because it has a lower moisture content than the air.
The air is higher than 18% moisture.
Yes.
Yeah.
So
unless you are in a closet with a dehumidifier.
Right. So there's four reasons. So I always, it being, you know, skincare, I'll take a little bit more of this drink.
Oh, we didn't even say. So I cracked a bottle of cider.
I do like it. I was like, I don't know. Am I going to like this? I need a backup here in case I don't, but I do like it.
So shout out to my buddy Justin and his brother. Justin's a regular over at Forest and Main, where I work. And I used to have like a no homebrew policy where I just didn't want to ever drink people's homebrew because it's often really, really bad. until I get to know somebody and like I hear them talking about beer and I'm like, all right, I trust you now. And a couple months ago, he was like, hey man, we made some cider. I'm like, here, I would love for you to try it. And it was really good. I was thoroughly impressed. But this one, I don't think I told you, Carrie, he used our honey to finish.
Like, yeah, it.
So this is a cider. and it has turmeric and ginger in it.
Okay.
And I love it. It's very subtle.
It's mild. Yeah, I like it.
It has like a little bit of a little spicy. You can kind of pick up on it. But turmeric in beverages tends to come off to me like chalky a lot of times. I love turmeric. Turmeric is wonderful, but it's not always wonderful in like kombucha or in ciders. Right. This is really beautiful. So Justin, you...
Yeah, well done.
Yeah, you really did. This is beautiful.
All right. So there's four... So back to the whole thing, I started trying to fight my acne, started using honey, and I knew it was antimicrobial and antifungal, right? And antibacterial, but I didn't know why.
We always say that, but like, what is it?
And I knew it was a humectant, which means it draws moisture to the skin, which is good for acne because it can fight all of these things while not drying out your skin. But okay, so then I found out four reasons why it's antimicrobial, antifungal, antibacterial, which I just think is like the coolest thing.
It's like David Letterman, like four reasons why honey is disinfectant.
Well, because like I didn't do well in science in high school, but now science is cool because I don't have to like take a test on it. So I can just like understand it as much as I understand it.
But also like Dr. Vincent Aloyo, if he was your teacher in high school, you probably would have been more into it.
I would have gotten an A+.
Vince is the man.
Okay. So it is antimicrobial and antifungal because bacteria, yeast, and fungi want to eat honey. So it's like a defense mechanism of the honey to be antimicrobial and antifungal.
Oh, because it is these things, it protects itself from being eaten.
By bacteria, yeast, and fungi.
All right.
So it's like evolution has created this. Yeah. So honey has a low pH and is acidic so that it inhibits bacterial growth because they don't grow in low pH.
Yes.
Like...
Yeah, like vinegar.
Environments.
Yeah. Okay. Although vinegar is, whatever, we're not going to dive into that.
Right. Osmolality, again, don't know, but it's like osmosis, the same idea kind of as osmosis.
Osmolality.
So it goes back to that kind of hygroscopic thing where honey is absorbing water, okay?
Yeah, like if you had that silica packet in, what do they come in, like new shoes or...
Food, like all kinds of stuff, yeah.
That is drawing so moisture. Low of a moisture content that it absorbs other moisture. Same concept, right?
Yes. So, if I'm not even going to get too much into this, but so let's say you have this bacteria or whatever, something unwanted in the honey. The honey is absorbed. It's a cell. Let's say there's like a bacterial cell in the honey. Well, the honey is drawing out moisture. So it dehydrates the cell and it kills all of these other things that want
to
grow.
Which would make sense why when you have like a gnarly wound and you put honey in it, it's going to go to work.
Yes.
Cool.
And I don't totally understand this. And I learned this, but like I've tried to look it up and I'm not entirely sure, but I was told that honey obviously promotes healing, but it also removes damaged cells. I'm not sure how it removes damaged cells, but like that would be part of it.
Honey has the compound in it that is this hydrogen peroxide, right?
Yes. So, okay, I'm going to get to that in a second.
Yeah.
Because this deals with, okay, so bacteria, fungi, yeast cannot survive. Excuse me. Cannot survive in honey, but spores can survive in honey.
Okay. I wonder why that is. You just have like a thicker cell wall or something?
They're like seeds, kind of. Like, I guess they're just not, I don't know.
Whatever.
Thicker cell wall sounds good to me, but
let's make stuff
we're
up.
Not. Let's just spread misinformation.
Dope.
Okay. So, but like, I mean, beekeepers know about American foulbrood. American foulbrood is spread through spores. So that's how American foulbrood can spread through honey. Which do you want to say real quick, the whole, when you get a nuke... When you get a swarm, don't feed them. I think you said that last time.
Yeah, I've mentioned it before, but for beekeepers out there, if you catch a swarm or you you split a hive, don't feed them syrup immediately. A lot of times you catch a swarm, you put it in a box, you want that to give it the best environment. So you're like, let's feed it, make sure they're happy. Here's the deal. When a swarm leaves their original hive that you may not know where that is, they fill up their honey stomachs with honey and they fly. So that way they have energy to either, you know, feed the queen, feed themselves, make wax. So when you put them in a new hive, if you are to feed them syrup, they will immediately take the honey that is in their honey stomachs and store it in the new hive. But if you don't feed them, they're going to ingest and they're going to eat and consume the honey that's in their honey stomachs. And upon consumption, the spores die. So in their digestion, those American foulbrood spores specifically, not European, but American, will die. And then you don't have to worry about that really bad disease coming into a new hive.
And it's just a couple days.
It's just a couple days, literally like 2 or 3 days.
So botulism is also a spore, which this is super interesting because I always knew babies can't have honey. Right? Like babies
super little baby. Well, they say under a year.
Under like, a year. Okay. Yeah. So
more like super baby infants, right?
Well, okay. So botulism grows in low oxygen environments. So if there's oxygen, botulism does not grow. So babies.
If there is oxygen, it does not grow.
Yes.
Yeah. Interesting.
But it only grows
in other shit can grow though.
Right. But not botulism. Yeah. So babies' GI tracts. Babies' GI tracts are like, you know, like between 3 and 6 months, they can be weak. They're not mature. They're not necessarily that strong. They can even stop working for a short period of time, or they're just moving food slowly through their system. And so it creates low oxygen environments where botulism can grow. So if you feed your baby...
So their digestive tract hasn't developed enough that it's quickly moving things through.
And it can eat, it can stall also, which the
makes
baby's
sense.
Fine.
Yeah.
But if you're giving the baby honey and there are botulism spores in that honey and the baby's digestive tract is a low oxygen environment because of the, you know, it's just a baby, botulism can happen in the GI tract. So It's thought that this is only probably happening in babies like a few months old. Like,
yeah, I was going to say a few weeks old to a few months old. But
a few weeks old to a few months old. Yeah, but just in general, they say wait for a year, which I'm not telling anybody to wait less than a year. But I just thought that was really interesting because I didn't know.
Yeah, you always hear that and you always see the warning label, but why?
Yeah, cool why? I didn't know why. Okay, number three. So that's number two. Number three is that, and this is like a little above my head, pay grade in science, but
all right, so we actually are editing out a few minutes that Kara just had, that we just had.
Confused.
And you could hear Kara kind of preface it by like, it was a little over my head. Well, she proceeded to say some information that wasn't exactly correct. She mixed up a few things. Proceeded to call me an idiot and tell me how dumb I was because I was disagreeing with her. And it was just not. Like this huge fight happened. So we can't have that on
real
the pod.
Awkward.
Not quite. She made some comments.
I did not make comments. Let's isolate them. We can have the people decide.
Yeah. All right. So here's the point number three. We figured it out. We dove into it. Went back and checked some of Kara's notes. Did a little Googling.
Google helps.
Yeah.
Google actually doesn't help with this.
Give it a Goog.
It's complicated.
So here's what's going down.
We'll simplify
it. Point number three, these antimicrobial, antibacterial properties in honey, a lot of that is because a chemical reaction occurs with the nectar being converted into honey. The bees are introducing enzymes to that nectar. One of the enzymes is called glucose oxidase. That enzyme, and through a chemical reaction with the glucose, aka sugar, aka the nectar, is creating H2O2, which is hydrogen peroxide. Once the moisture level drops down to 18%, the glucose oxidase no longer can have that chemical reaction. The hydrogen peroxide is made, and that is the low acidic environment that is shelf stable forever. Amazing.
And hydrogen peroxide is antibacterial.
And it's in the honey.
Yeah.
You can, you don't want honey to pick up moisture because it's so low in moisture content itself. If you leave it out, it can pick up moisture, and that's not good. So, you always want to keep it in a sealed container, blah, blah, blah.
Unless it's on your face and a honey mask, and then that's good, and it's drawing in moisture to your skin and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, we could dive into, what actually is happening with your skin and cells with honey some other time, I think. We probably need to do some Googling.
I don't know if I should be responsible for that. I think I say earlier in this podcast that I love science, but I don't want to take tests on it. This was an example.
Yeah, but now we through the magic of editing, we are including this just to kind of get some of that other information and confusion out and this proper information in. We hope, but we still have the original audio. I'm going to put that in a vault somewhere. Back to the live episode.
Bees add antibacterial protein to the honey. So the honeybee salivary glands secrete small proteins. They're called defensin 1 and defensin 2, and they have potent antibacterial properties, which also create this antibacterial situation.
Yeah. So again, if you're just thinking that you can finish the honey, you can finish this nectar for the bees, you better get these compounds and spit in your honey or something, because that process is not occurring anymore. And it's just not as good. And honestly, when that honey is properly finished, it just tastes better. And it's better for you. Again, these amazing qualities that are found in real, true, raw honey aren't going to be found in honey that somebody decided that they wanted to cheat and finished on their own.
Yeah, it can't be human manufactured. Also, yeah. I think it's interesting to know that the honey stomach is not the bee's stomach.
Yeah, it's like a separate.
So it's like before, there's like a valve. So bees will collect nectar, they'll put it in their honey stomach, and there's a valve. So if they want to eat a little bit while they're out on their flight and they need energy, they can. But it's not necessarily like they're putting it in their stomach and then they're regurgitating it back up. It's their honey stomach and then their stomach. And there's enzymes, but it's not necessarily just, they're two separate things.
Yeah, it's so cool. I'm still confused on this other thing, but whatever.
I mean, I wish, into it.
I wish we talked about it beforehand just so we could kind of figure it out together.
We did figure it out together like a couple weeks ago when we were like, we need to do
we need to do it. It's, and you like, you, that's when you talked about the beer thing. You're like, there's a reaction. There's a reaction, a scientific reaction.
Yeah. Anyway, honey's super rad and humans can't recreate what the bees are doing. So why don't you just not try and let the bees and nature be a little more natural? And guess what? It ends up being a better product. Or maybe we shouldn't tell anybody this because it just makes our honey stand out more. And that's cool, too. Dude, word is spreading, which is so fun. People are like, yo, I heard your honey is like the best. Like, can I, where can I get it? And, you know, stores hitting us up, being like, we'd like, we want to carry your honey. We heard it's like super, super good. It's fun. I mean, it's funny because it's like, it's not us. It's like the bees are doing it. We're just letting them do it.
Yeah.
Which, you know, also means we're not getting as big of a crop as some other people. And that's totally fine by me. Because again, our mentality is bee first, honey second, or maybe honey like third or fourth, you know? But yeah. We had the state inspector come out.
Yes.
That was cool.
I thought it was going to be like, it was hours and hours.
Yeah.
I mean, we're also friends with him. So we were chit-chatting it up.
Shout out Jeff Eckel. He's the state inspector in our area. I think there's two in Pennsylvania and they kind of split the state. And he has all the counties around.
I think there's like six in Pennsylvania.
Oh, really? We had two at our meeting. Yeah, and one I think was there's like a lot PA. In Pennsylvania. Okay. Yeah. Well, either way, he covers like very populated area. So he's a busy, busy man. But when, we sometimes will have extra queens, and depending on how we want to approach our business model next year, we may sell some five-frame nukes of overwintered bees to beekeepers that, unfortunately, if their bees die, you know, you gotta buy new bees sometimes. And we take a lot of pride in our queens and just the lineage and how good they are and how they are hygienic and blah, 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 blah. So like, I think it'd be really cool if people need bees, they can get them from us. The ones that we've had for years, these same lines that have proven to overwinter. But in order to sell bees or sell queens, you need to get inspected by the state inspector. So I, you know, gave Jeff a shout out or a call. And like within like a couple days, he was like, hey man, I'm coming out. Like, are you around? And you were somewhere, and I called you and was like, hey, Jeff's coming over.
I was like, I'm coming.
And you're like, sweet, I'm leaving.
Canceling my plans.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I wanted to be there. Because also, if you're a beekeeper, people are always like, oh, if the beekeeper and state inspector comes out, like, should I be nervous? And since day one, it's always been like, no, this person is your friend.
Yeah.
They're not trying to, like, they're not the bee police.
Well, it's interesting because it is kind of an ego thing where you don't want him to tell you there's something wrong because you view that as you're doing something wrong, which may be the case with a lot of people, but it also might not be the case. Like, you can learn from him saying, this is what I'm seeing, this is how, what you should do.
That's how I, being a You're teacher, good like that. I'm always like, tell me everything. I don't even care. Yeah, so he didn't see, he saw like...
He literally goes into every single hive.
Every single hive.
And, you know,
and I was we just, have about, well, how many do we have here? 13?
Yeah. And he, so he goes into every hive, he pulls a couple frames of brood, sees like what the larva looks like, checks it out. He knows so many of these diseases and how to identify them. And it was really rad. He found literally out of all those 10 or 11 hives that he inspected, he found one single cell larva that he said that looks like what? Chalk brood? Sack brood. He was like, super normal. If I saw like a bunch of it, I'd be worried. I literally only found one. He's like, your bees are really, they're awesome. They're doing really well.
He also taught us.
And then we like sat down with him and just hung out and asked him questions.
He also taught us that, so, you know, when larva is sick, or I'll say pupa, larva, brood is sick, certain like strains of bees will, if they're hygienic bees, they will uncap the cells and remove the pupa. And so one way to be able to tell, are they capping or are they uncapping? And certain, like, if to identify diseases, there's like pinholes in the cappings.
Yeah, they'll chew like a little pinhole in the capping.
Yeah, but if you look around and there's like 6 day old, so like really fat, healthy larva around the capped brood. And then also the capped brood has a hole like at the center of the cell. That means that they're just capping, right?
Yeah, they cap like, it very like symmetrically. They finish at the very center of the
And then if you cell. See those fat larvae around, it's like time to cap.
Yeah.
But if those yeah. fat larvae aren't around and there's pinholes like on the edges, that means that there could be disease, whatever, whatever. So that was like really interesting. One of the things yeah. that I found.
I wish I could remember all the things we were asking. And he's just, you know, I mean, it's pretty crazy. I mean, just this year alone, because we've ramped up our amount of hives by 5 times more than we ever have, you know. Even though it's one beekeeping season, we've done 5, 6, 7 times more inspections than any other season. So it's almost like this one season, we've seen more bees than all of our other seasons combined.
Yeah.
And you just, it's so crazy how quickly you can learn more and more and more.
That's even like...
Because you're just involved with it more and more and more. And then you got Jeff, who literally as a job is just inspecting hives. So... Imagine how much he's seeing.
It's cool to just watch him work too, because he's like so cool about it. He's like, yeah, just going in hives.
Yeah, this is what I do.
Yeah,
he's like, it's a pretty cool job.
Yeah, he was. No, he was like, it's like the greatest job.
And he's got a great apiary, Instar Apiaries, that sells honey to a lot of spots that we have around us, and he actually imports some very specific honeys, and has providers in other countries that he knows and he trusts and he works with. And when I look at the back of a honey jar and I see like product of Ukraine or something, I'm like, oh man, here we go.
You
like,
talk so this? Much shit on the what in the grocery this? store, and then you realize it was his and you're like, oh wait, hold on.
Yeah, but it kind of leads to like, it's interesting, like know your farmers, you know where you're getting produce from, know where you're getting your honey from, know where you're getting your skincare from. If you know these things, you can make better decisions.
Yeah.
And, you know, if I didn't know that Jeff was Instar AP, I would never have bought that honey.
Right.
You know, I would have just said, like, I'm going to err on the side of caution and I'm not going to buy something that's from another country because it's, you know, might be bullshit. Just like I'm not buying a plastic bear at a Acme Markets full of honey. But that was really cool. And it felt good to have him say, like, you have really great apiary. Like, you guys are doing a good job. So we are in the process now of checking for mites. So varroa like... mites is the bane of existence for beekeepers, and they cause so many problems. And we try to do some integrated pest, IPM, integrated pest management practices to help with that in the beginning of the season. We're splitting hives, which is leading to a brood break, which helps the bees control mites themselves. We have drone comb that we're pulling out and freezing and feeding our chickens with it. And it's so great. But now as the population of bees is rising. So, you know, March hits, they have brood in there, they start growing. Maybe we split a hive in April or in May, and then both of those hives are growing and growing and growing. And then you're going to hit July, and that's when nectar starts drying up. There's not as much pollen. There's not as much forage for them. It's called the dearth. And that's when they kind of plateau. Their population plateaus, and then it starts to dip. They know, like, we don't have enough resources, so we're not going to make as many babies. But unfortunately, the mite population continues to grow at this point. So this is when the bee population starts to decline, but the mites start to outpace the bees. And this is when you can really, really run into issues. So our methodologies, July hits and it's like, all right, let's start testing for mites. This is one of the least fun things about beekeeping, because you have to kill about 300 bees in order to test that hive to see what the concentration of mites is. There's a really powerful website called Scientific Beekeeping. It's Randy Oliver. He's very much a household name for beekeepers. And he pretty much devotes his time to varroa mites and to the best practices of testing for them. So a lot of people will do alcohol washes, like literally taking rubbing alcohol. And you drown the bees, you suffocate them. And and the mites drop off, and you can see how many were in that sample of 300. We've done powdered sugar. So if you coat bees in powdered sugar and you shake them around, the powdered sugar, for whatever reason, knocks the mites off, and you can see. And for a long time, we thought that was keeping the bees alive. It's not as accurate of a test, but some recent studies have shown that the bees do eventually die, and it basically clogs their
slower, painful death.
Yeah, and if there's more studies happening, and if it comes out that it's like, hey, they really aren't dying, then I will probably go back to doing that. It takes much longer, but if we can keep the bees alive, that's great. But right now we're doing these alcohol washes, but we're actually doing with dish soap. So Dawn dish soap in particular, Randy Oliver found 1 to 2 tablespoons per gallon of water. That mixture will knock those mites off in the same way. So we tested every single one of our hives, and only 2 of the 20 some that we manage had more than 3 mites out of that 300 sample. So more than a 1% concentration of Varroa mites, which is really awesome. And we're going to treat those 2 hives.
We already started.
Literally. And we'll talk more about that later on. That's too much to get into right now. Like, for sure.
We can totally get into all of this.
But what we're doing is we're testing now the beginning of every month. So we'll test again August 1st. Because again, that population is plateauing and it's starting to decline, which means the mites can just take off. And we've literally seen August 1st, 0 mites. September 1st, 70 mites. I mean, Jeff talked about a couple that he saw that were hundreds of mites after 0 mites in a shorter span than that.
Yeah, let's make this our next topic, because there's so much to talk about, and I feel like we're just like cramming in it at the end here. And it's a good, like, there's so much to say.
We're just over an hour. I think this is probably a good spot to wrap it up. But I mean, it's interesting though. And I do want to give a shout out to some of our mentees, actually all of our mentees right now, because I think every one of them has hit us up and been like, hey, how can I test for these mites? I know I need to do it. And as a beginning beekeeper, it's really tough to do it. Like, we didn't want to do it. We didn't want to kill bees, but we're humanizing that.
Right.
I truly feel that hive, those hives, they have a hive mentality, and they would say, do we need to sacrifice 300 of the 60,000, 75,000 bees in this hive in order to test to see whether we're in trouble? Yes, we need to do that. And there'd be 300 bees that would volunteer.
They're ninjas.
And they'd step up to the plate and go,
they're ninjas.
Harry Carey, and they'd be like, all right, I'm done.
Yeah.
Test me. So
let's do that next time. I think that's a good topic.
Cool. I'm glad that was fun. I'm glad we've finally got a chance to sit down.
I thought that was a good one.
Yeah, it was really good.
Minus the hydrogen peroxide. But if you listen
back. We're going to figure that out exactly.
Hold on. If you listen back, I think like.
You think you nailed it? I was super confused.
I've been confused the whole time, but like, I think it's right. We'll see. We can talk about it. And we can maybe start with any clarification next podcast.
Yeah, and then before the next podcast, Karen and I are going to crush some mad honey, and then we're going to just tell you all about super it. Weird.
We should just buy some.
No, but we could do something else. Whatever.
I might buy it as a gift for you.
I don't really want you to.
Why not?
I don't know. There's plenty of other psychedelics I'd love.
Yeah, but this is also, that's also the thing. Like, is it supporting these native people that are like going and foraging it?
Or all right, I'll tell you what, like, let's go to Nepal.
All right.
We'll go to Nepal and we'll just do this ourselves. We'll do it the real deal way, and we'll report back.
I don't know if you've seen though, there are like ropes and stuff. Like,
yo, I'm in. You see me climb up like 50 feet into a tree, I'm down.
You're going to be sweating a lot.
There's no chance I'm doing
that. Those men are like tiny little people.
What? My Sherpa Lapsang? Lapsang's the man, dude. Don't talk smack on Lapsang just because he weighs like 90 pounds and
can climb
Mount
Everest. I'm not talking smack on them.
Well, as always, if you lasted this long, you're an absolute rock star. We super appreciate it. Keep hitting us up with questions. Keep hitting us up with your questions lead to ideas of things that we talk about. And a lot of the stuff that we mentioned here came from conversations with beekeepers that I thought, wow, this is interesting. Let's talk about it. So I love it. We love the feedback. We got a bunch of YouTube videos that we need to put out. I just need to get to editing and get some stuff out there.
Yeah, it's hard in the like summer months to like sit in front of your computer and edit.
Yeah. Plus like in the non-summer, like you're going to bed at 9 o'clock and I'm sitting here by myself. So I'm like, all right, let me go into the computer room and bust this out. But you know, I'd like to hang out with you and.
That's nice.
Yeah. Sometimes. Yeah.
Well, check out, if you haven't checked out Carajo Skincare, check it out. The prices are low. Like if you just want to like kind of, you know, sample something, you can get something for $10.
If you're local to the Philadelphia area, we want to shout out Dave's Backyard Farms. He has a market called
Dave's Backyard Farms. Yeah, Creek, but it's in Creekside Tap and Market and Tap in Elkins Park.
Elkins Park, Pennsylvania.
He sells our honey. He sells our soap, our shampoo bar.
And he's the man, and he's like one of those people. I trust him. If he's bringing something in, I know how his ethos, and I'm down with it. And I'm like, cool, I will buy that chicken because I trust you that this is coming from a good place. He's
just such a great guy.
And he's a really good dude. We love what he's done.
Known him for a while.
And shout out to our friends at Taproot Farms. They've always pushed us to just grow our business with Carajo Skincare.
Yeah.
Ola and her husband George pushed us into making more soaps, and they're
an amazing organic farm in Shoemaker farm. Pennsylvania. If you're in the area, they have a bunch of CSA spots that you can check out, and their CSA is like amazing.
Yeah, we've done a few CSAs, and then once we got into Taproot, we're not going anywhere else.
Yeah,
CSA, community supported agriculture, like you get a box every week from a farmer of what's in season.
All right, time to shut up.
Yeah, thank you again for listening. We love you all, and we're excited to not wait 5 weeks till our next episode.
Yeah, we'll do it soon.
Let's play it off with this beautiful ditty.
Let's do it.